Right. So, first of all, we're going to look at the verses, the key verse from the Sentra. Right. So the whole. Hi, Jeremy. That's lovely.
Hi, Charlie. Yeah.
Hi, lovely seeing you. Yeah. So the key verse from the Sentra, which basically is the whole focus of the discourse of the Maimon, is Ve'ele Toldot Yitzchak. These are the generations of Yitzchak, Ben Avraham, the son of Abraham. Avraham holedet Yitzchak. Abraham gave birth to Yitzchak. So we have here the idea that Yitzchak is the son of Abraham and that Abraham gave birth to Yitzchak, which seems to be saying the same thing twice. But the discourse is exploring the different levels of meaning of Yitzchak, Isaac, and of Abraham, and the order in which they appear, Isaac, Abraham, Abraham, Isaac. So that's really the theme of the discourse. So let's see if we can get a Maimon Nigun out of the store of things that we have over here. Here we are. Right, so here we have the discourse, and it was said on this Shabbat, Toldot, and it was in 1964. I think Rabbi Lee might have been present at the saying of the discourse. Yes, he was. So here we have, Ve'ele Toldot Yitzhak, these are the generations of Yitzhak, then Avraham, the son of Abraham. Avraham holedet Yitzchak, Abraham gave birth to Yitzchak. And then the Rebbe says, Yidu HaKushya B'zeh, it's known the question about this. Shema'acha, the Ma'acha Shekva Ne'ma Yitzchak ben Avraham, since it's already told us, Isaac is the son of Abraham, Lama Chozer Katuv, why does the verse repeat itself and say, V'kofel, Avraham holedet Yitzchak, Abraham gave birth to Isaac. That's one question. Gam tzarich lavin madu nitzkeru v'katubu. Then there's another question. Why is it that Avraham and Yitzchak, each of them are mentioned shtei pamim, twice in the verse? The verse is repeating itself, but when you look at their names, it could have repeated itself in different ways, if that's what it wanted to do. But it's doing it in such a way that we have each name twice. Now it explains about this in Torah O, which is a book by Rabbi Shneur Zalman, the founder of Chabad in the first generation. And in Torat Chaim, which is a book by the second Lubavitcher Rebbe in the second generation, Rabbi Dovver, the Chassidische Sedra. And the Rebbe is turning these books by Rabbi Shneur Zalman and his son, Rabbi Dovver, their Hasidic teachings about the Sedra of the week are the Hasidic Sedra. So there's the regular Sedra of the week, there's the portion of the week, which is written in the Torah, in the Bible, the five books of Moses. And then there's the Hasidic Sedra, which is the Hasidic philosophical discussions of the Sedra. So it explains that Sha'Avraham, that when it says Avraham, Abraham, who bechinat mayin dechurim, this is what's called the masculine flow. Itaruta de la'ela, the arousal from above. The Yitzchak and Isaac, on the other hand, who bechinat mayim nukfit, is the feminine flow. Itaruta de la tata, the arousal from below. Now, these considering Judaism, life, spiritual existence in terms of this arousal from above and arousal from below, as far as I understand, is something that begins in the Holy Zohar. It's not something mentioned in the Talmud, as far as I know. It's a Zohar explanation, which in Hasidic thought is explored very, very extensively. And it has to do with the way, on the one hand, people interact with each other, husband and wife interact with each other, the way the individual interacts with the divine. And this is the way in which we're looking at it here, and also can sometimes be more subtle aspects of that. So now we're looking at 9:10. V'yesh b'zeh shnei inyanim. Now there's two aspects to this. Inyan rishon, the first aspect is, hu ha'itaruta de la'ela, it's the arousal from above, shem'oreret itaruta de la'tata, which arouses, excites the response, if you like, the arousal, that it's like, in this case, it's a response. The response from below.
Tali, I can't hear you.
You can't hear me at all?
I can't. It's very weak.
Likewise. I thought it was my hearing.
The other participants.
I'm just trying to see. One second. Can you hear me now?
No, it's the same.
No, I wonder why that is. Okay, thank you for pointing that out. So let me just see if
it's a bit better. When you say, can you hear me now?
Yeah. One second.
For chesed.
What?
Ah.
Is that better?
That was good. Yeah, solved it now.
I don't know why. I didn't
keep it like that.
Is it like this good?
Yes, much better.
I don't know what the difference is. I'm sitting 2 inches closer. All right. So there are two aspects.
It shows what a bit of closeness can achieve.
Oh, good Marshall.
So the first idea is 9-11, that the itaruta de la eila, sorry, line 11, that the itaruta de la eila, the arousal from above, shem'oreret, which arouses the response from below, v'zeo Yitzchak ben Avraham. That's what it means. Isaac is the son of Abraham. Isaac represents the response from below. And so the response from below is predicated on the arousal from above. Sha'itahut de la tata Yitzchak.
So that means the response from below, the Isaac in this case, he bevchinat ben. It's like the child. Isaac is the son of Abraham. It's the arousal from below is the child. It's the result of shenilkachat meitahuta deleila, which comes from the arousal from above Abraham. Let's just try to understand what this is saying. Let's imagine you have a relationship with another person, might be a parent with a child, a teacher with a pupil, and the teacher is an inspiring teacher, the parent is an inspiring parent, and the parent says to the pupil, to the child, to the son, the daughter, they give them some sort of inspiration. So the child, or it might be from the Rebbe gives inspiration to us, to an individual. So the Rebbe, the higher level, as it were, is giving something to the person who is absorbing that. And as a result, there is a response in that person, which is like the child of the inspiring person. So the fact that the person hears the Rebbe say something very inspiring, or the father or the mother, and they respond to that. So it's something which is coming, in a way, it's coming from that inspiring communicator. And now when the child or the disciple, the student, responds, their response is coming from that higher level. So their response is a child of the higher level. So that's one aspect. But then we have another aspect, which is in line 15. The inyan hasheni, now the second aspect, hu ha'itaruta dela'ela, is the arousal from above, shaba, which comes, la'achre itaruta dela'tata, after the arousal from below, v'notenet koach b'itaruta dela'tata, and it gives strength to the arousal from below, sheyeh mimena inyan shel holoda, that arousal from below is now so powerful that it's able to give birth. And that's what it means, v'zeh inyan Avraham olidet Yitzchak, the second part of the verse. Abraham gave birth to Isaac. And it is looking at the way that he's giving birth to Isaac, it's interpreting it in a more subtle way. Abraham, the arousal from above, gave the power to Isaac that he should give birth. So it's not just, you see, holid is a very interesting word in Hebrew. And normally it is used in the Bible to mean so-and-so gave birth to someone. But it's a causative form, it's a hifil. It's making someone else do something. Like, so one way of interpreting it, which it's doing here, is that Abraham gives the power of generation to Isaac. Now this Abraham, let's go back to the beginning. We're in line 19 and we'll come back to that, but let's just look at the four words. So we've got Yitzhak, the son of Abraham. So Yitzhak is the arousal from below, which is the son of Abraham, which is the inspiration from above. So the inspiration from above causes an arousal from below, causes a response. The teacher is teaching the pupil, and the pupil, let's say, laps it up, and is very enthusiastic and is excited, and the teaching has gone into the pupil, and the pupil is now excited about it. Now, because the pupil is excited about it, that causes a new level to come out from the teacher. So there we have Abraham on a higher level. It's a higher level of arousal from above, because the first level of arousal from above, let me get my little pen, which we're able to get in this system. So the first level of arousal from above, Abraham, is enough to trigger off Isaac. But as a result of that, we get a second level of arousal from above. So that's like the response moving from below to above and affecting the one who's inspiring, because the disciple, because the student or the son or the daughter asks a very good question or makes a very good comment. The teacher gets all excited about that and starts teaching ideas that they maybe weren't originally intending to teach, but the pupil is lapping it up. So let's give something more, something precious, something rare. And so you have a higher level of this inspiration from above. Now, this level, this second level of inspiration from above, is so powerful that it's holid et Yitzhak. It makes Isaac, it makes the hearer, the disciple, the student, the son or the daughter, it makes them in such a way that they can now give birth. Not only are they inspired by the teacher, but they can even give birth. All this translates also into the relation between husband and wife. There's the interaction begun off by the husband, the response by the wife, which brings a greater response from the husband, and that causes the wife to give birth, right? So it can be read in that way as well. So here we have this concept applied to our spiritual lives in relation to the divine. And you could say that we're always, life is a process of moving between these different dimensions. Are we at the first stage? Are we the Isaac who is being inspired at the very beginning? Or maybe we're not yet in the verse. We haven't yet been inspired. We're waiting for the inspiration to come. You know, there's some people who say, if only miracles happen nowadays, you know, then I'd be able to be a from Jew, an Orthodox Jew. If only miracles happen nowadays, you know, I want the inspiration from above. And another way of putting it is that we're getting the inspiration from above all the time. Open your eyes, see the sunrise in the morning, whatever is happening, the leaves on the trees. Now it's autumn, most beautiful here in England, the most beautiful autumns. That's a bit like New England in America. That's how I think of New England. It's got the same trees, the same atmosphere of the beautifully decorated trees. So whatever we have around us is really a level of inspiration. And then comes the question of how we respond. So if we're able to respond, then we trigger off, you see, an even higher level from above. And that's a very interesting way of understanding existence. You know, the person put in a certain effort, they're inspired, and they put in a certain effort. And as a result, I mean, if you put it in a very secular way, you know, their perception of existence changed in such a way that now they see it in much more spiritual terms. So because we're inspired to level, on a 1 to 10 scale, we get inspired on a level 2.5. Because there is the sun rising in the morning and the Hebrew letters in the Siddur, in the prayer book. It's, so it's inspiring us to a 2.5 level. Then you start praying. And you're praying, and it's as if the words in the Siddur are speaking to you. It's not just you speaking to the prayer book speaking back at you. And you can see these words, these sacred words, which are in the prayer book, they're transmitted. down from Sinai through the prophets and the sages. That's the whole collection of what is in the prayer book, Psalms, different passages from the Bible. It's and you respond to that, and it's entering into you. There's a greater level of excitement. And now what you see in the world around you, it seems to be responding to your excitement. You know, suddenly it was cloudy before, suddenly the sun comes out. It's all like a very spiritual interaction taking place. And then that has an effect on you, that you become someone who is able to give even more. You're able to give birth in some spiritual or practical way. You give birth, you create something, you write something, you do something meaningful. All right, does any of this make sense to anyone? Hi, Gloria.
Hi, darling. Hi.
Yeah, does this sort of interaction, does it make sense? Is it something you're able to relate to, or is it just my vain imaginings?
I think it makes sense. It's a kind of a development of and a handing down of one to the other, which is inspiring. It makes perfect sense.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. So one second, there's some comments in the chat. Okay, so some people were able to hear. Thank you for the information in the chat. But I hope you can hear now. All right, let's go back to the text. Right, so we were on line 15. Now, this is the first way of understanding it. No, we finished with line. Now we're on line 19. Now, another explanation of this, which is from footnote 6, from another discourse. The Rebbe is like quoting different discourses. You know, there's the Rebbe is the seventh Rebbe, and there are six Rebbeim before him. Apart from the whole Bible, the whole Mishnah, the whole Talmud, the whole Midrash, the whole Zohar, all the writings of Kabbalah and so on, and the Baal Shem Tov and the Maggid of Meserich and all the other kinds of literature, all of which the Rebbe knew and which informed the way he's teaching. But you then have the specific teachings of the seven Chabad Rebbeim, from Rabbi Shneur Zalman to the Mittler Rebbe, Rabbi Dov Ber, and then the third one, the Tzemach Tzedek, Rabbi Nachum Mendel, around 1850, and so on. So now the Rebbe is taking another way of analyzing this. Va'od ve'yu b'zeh, let's get back to my little pen. Oops. Right. Another explanation, another way of understanding. The Hine Avraham u'bechinat chesed. Abraham means kindness. That's the quality of Abraham. This is like the list of the sfirot, the divine emanations. So Abraham is the attribute kindness, and then Isaac is the attribute of severity, as we're going to see. But when we consider kindness, what is this kindness, ba'avodat ha'adam, in the service of the individual? In the service of the individual, of course, just pure kindness is also something very important. But service of the individual means in our intimate individual relationship with the divine. You see, the thing about Judaism is that it has rules that we sort of carry out as a community. You know, there's Shabbat is the time you go to the synagogue, okay? Let's imagine, you know, everyone goes to the synagogue. Everyone is able to go to the synagogue. Sukkot is the time you make a sukkah. Hanukkah, you make a Hanukkah lamp. Purim, you read the Megillah, all the different things. You know, it's like group activities in a sense. But then there's a personal dimension. Even in those group activities, there is a personal way of doing it. When you spend Friday night with one family, it's a different kind of experience than Friday night with another family. Even though, in theory, they're all doing the same thing, but they're just little differences. When you come to prayer, prayer is highly individualized. And each individual, it's like, you know, sometimes a person can ask. And it makes sense, the question. How can we pray from a prayer book which has got the same words for everyone? Surely I'm an individual and my prayer is going to be different from the other person. And nonetheless, we're both standing with the same prayer book and we're saying the same words. So one of the ways I try to explain this is imagine a virtuoso pianist. And there's a score of a piece of music, something or other. Imagine a piece of classical music, something by Bartok, let's imagine. So or Mozart, one person plays it this way, and the other virtuoso pianist plays it slightly different. In fact, there are connoisseurs of music who can say immediately, oh, I know who's playing that. Or I know who's playing that. That not only do they recognize that this is by Mozart, but they can tell who it is who is playing it. The player is playing it in a very individualistic way. Even though both musicians playing the piano are playing the same notes that Mozart wrote. So lahavda. We have the words in the prayer, the way in the prayer book, the way each person says that prayer is different to everyone else. And even each day might be a different day, might be a different mood, a different style, different things are happening around. The person focuses on this and focuses on that. Just recently, my own process of prayer has been radically changed due to the lessons I have with one of the classes in the Lubavitch Senior Girls. So in this Lubavitch school, the top class, sometimes lower as well, but the top class studies selections from the Talmud. And I have, thank God, I've got the role of giving that to them. So we study, we photocopy a bit of Talmud, and we, in the Ein Yaakov version, which has got like stories from the Talmud, and we explore that together. So we explored a beautiful piece of Talmud, which describes a very, very spiritual activity in which one rabbi was telling the other about the most profound secrets of Torah, Maise Merkava, the work of the chariot. Very, very profound aspect of Judaism. And the two rabbis in the Talmud are talking about, you know, will you teach me the work of the chariot? And the other one says to him, you know, I can't teach it to you unless you know it already. So the first one says, I do know a bit of it already. Can I tell you what I know? So the other one says, all right, okay, so tell me. And he gets off, he was riding a donkey, gets off the donkey and he listens, you know, he's like very careful now. He's going to hear some of this wonderful teaching. But as the Talmud makes clear, it's not just a teaching that you teach, like ideas. It's something that happens. It's an experience. And as the other rabbi begins expounding, it doesn't say what he expounded. As he begins expounding, they're in a place where there are lots of trees. Suddenly the trees are licked by fire on their upper branches. They look round, you know, there's fire coming from these trees. And not only that, the trees start singing. The trees are singing. And then the Talmud says, so, and what do the trees sing? What are the words that the trees are singing? And there are two opinions. And one opinion is from the section Hoidu Lashem, which we say at the beginning of the main part of the prayers. And then there's another opinion, which is like later on, towards the end of the Psukei Dezimra, of the Psalms that we say every morning. So in other words, that whole section of Psalms can be seen as like the fiery singing of the trees. So if you appreciate that, that the Psalms that we say every morning, Psukei Dezimra, the singing of the trees, that gives a lot more inspiration in the way one is saying. Now coming back to the discourse here, so what one feels when one is excited is love, love of the divine. So there's chesed, which is kindness, uva avodat ha'adam, and in the service of the individual, the personal relationship that each one of us has with God, hu inyan ha'ava, it's love. But love is not enough. There has to be a deeper level as well, which is awe. Fear and awe, you could make it like a list. Respect, respect, fear, awe. V'yitzchak, and Isaac represents severity, u'ba'avodat ha'adam, and in the service of the person who inyan ha'yira. That is the fear or the awe. So there's love and awe. Those are two aspects of our relationship with the divine. And then there's a further point. Since the two aspects of love and of awe, in general, they're divided to two levels. And we have this is a very popular idea, so to speak, in Hasidic teachings. It's very often mentioned. Ahava zuta, the lower love, the small love, the ahava rabba, the great love. Yira zuta, the smaller awe, the yira ila, and the exalted awe. Lachein nema v'pasuk shtei pamim Avraham. That's why in the verse it says the name of Abraham twice. And the name Isaac is twice, because Abraham represents love and Isaac represents awe. And so since there are two kinds of love, the lower love and the higher love, and there are two kinds of awe, the lower awe and the higher awe, so their names appear twice. Behine, now behold, says the Rebbe, Seda habodahi, who the order of service of God is, first of all, yira tata, first of all, the lower kind of awe, fear. We don't want to break the law because we are afraid of upsetting God. We don't want to do the wrong thing. Then comes ahava zuta, then comes the lower love, a little love. Then comes a higher measure of love, ahava rabba. And then we come to yirah ila'ah, to the higher fear, the higher awe. Okay, let's just look at that. There's another phrase he says here, which itself could be the subject of a very deep discussion. V'chein hu seder arba otiyot shem havaya. Similarly, it's the series of letters of the four names of the name Yudke Vavke, the tetragrammaton, milamata lemaila, from below to above. So there's Yud at the beginning. Now that's very interesting. So it spells it out here. The yud at the beginning is the fear, the lower fear. Then there's the first hey, which is love. And then there's the vav, which is the higher love. And then there's the final hey, which is the upper or. Now, I seem to remember, we actually learned this discourse a few years ago. And when I discussed it, when I presented it in Lubavitch House, probably on a Shabbat afternoon, I think Diane Ruskin queried this, this interpretation on the side. Although it does say from below to above. Because normally we look at the yud of the divine name as being the highest letter, like it's as if the letters are going from above downwards, yud and then hey and then vav and then hey. All right, so that's an interesting point that I don't know the answer here. We'll maybe have a further discussion of it on Shabbat. And so also is the order in the service of prayer. About which it says, Sulam Mutzav Atza, the ladder is standing on the ground. And the top of the ladder reaches the heavens, Milamata Lamala, that we're moving from below to above. Shalachol Rosh, first of all, there's the idea of the lower fear. And that lower fear, now this is a very significant statement. This lower fear has to be there before the prayer. See, a person, this discourse has, you know, at this point, and I would say in general, it's a very profound statement of how a person might pray in a very meaningful and powerful way. So we've got the idea that there are these four levels. Let me just go back to the very beginning to just look at these again. You see, we've got Isaac, which is fear or awe. Then Abraham, which is the lower love. Then Abraham again, which is the higher love. And then the name Isaac, which is the supernal awe, the exalted awe. So we start off with the lower awe, and then Abraham, love, and then a higher kind of love, and Abraham again, and then a higher kind of awe.
The lower awe is the hey.
Sorry?
The lower awe is the hey.
That's how I would understand it.
That's what it says. That's what the Rebbe said. What it says on the side here does not contradict that. It just says that yud is the chilu, but it's yiri ilo.
See, here it's saying. I see. So if we have the tetragrammaton from above to below, let's say beginning at yud above, and then hey, and then vav, and then hey below, and we're looking at it now from below to above.
Yeah, you're climbing to the above.
Right. Okay, that makes sense. I'm not sure if the commentary on the sides understands it the same way.
It's in the word. You could read it in the words, even though it's not as clear. You, as a teacher, know, but it's there.
Okay. All right. Thank you. All right, but let's just understand this. So here we have a person praying. So the way that this is being explained, and it's often explained in this way, it comes from Rabbi Shneur Zalman's teaching, and so it's explored again and again by the other six Hasidic teachers after him. So we begin off with Isaac, which is awe or fear. Then there's Abraham, which is love, the first level of love, and then there's a higher level of love, and then finally there's the highest level of Isaac, of awe. supernal law. Now, if we come back to where we were up to, the Rebbe says a very interesting point. This beginning of basic awe, the lower level of awe, that has to be before the prayer, before a person starts praying. They have to be in a state of relationship with the infinite divine, which is a kind of basic level of awe. And that awe is expressed in the way that a person observes the Torah, their various Torah teachings, from the moment one wakes up till one says Moda Ani and washes Negel Vasa and gets dressed and says blessings, till they finally get to the point where they're beginning to pray. There's a whole, you know, various personal steps, spiritual steps to take. And what it's saying here is that the level of awe should be in the atmosphere before one begins praying. Kayadua, as is known, shahachidush, that the special thing, the avodat hatfilah, of the service of prayer, who in yana ahava is the idea of love. So the prayer itself has to be suffused with love. It has to be an expression of love. It has to galvanate love. And that's what the prayer actually does. And so where do we have the first level, the lower level of fear or awe, the lower level? That's there before the prayer begins. The ilu inyan hayira, because the idea of fear of God, tzarich liyot b'meshech kol hayom, it has to be the whole day long. Before one prays, after one prays, there always has to be that sense of awe, because otherwise one can stray off into the wrong things. That so we're all the time, as it were, being assailed by different possibilities, positive opportunities, negative opportunities, which we have to guide ourselves through. And so in order to do that properly, we need the sense of awe. V'acha kach, and after that, be'et ha'tfilah, when the person starts praying, tzarich le'oreh et ha'ava, we have to arouse love. So if we imagine everyone standing in the synagogue, in the women's section, there's the women, and the men's section, there's the men. And what are they trying to do? Arouse love. And they've got a prayer book in their hands, each person, and they're going to say the words of the prayer, but first of all, they're working to arouse this passion of love. Tchila, first of all, ahava zuta, the lower level of love, after that, the higher level of love. Well, that's what people are supposed to be doing. It may not always be obvious, but that's what they're supposed to be doing. And in some places, that's what they do. You can actually see it. That's what they're doing. And after that, when they are saying the Amidah, 18 benedictions, actually there's 19. Ba'im le'yira ilah, then they come to the higher kind of awe. So then when they're standing still facing towards the temple, in England we face east, because or southeast, because that's the direction of Jerusalem and the temple. And then they are praying in this very deep, single-minded way, and it can lead to a sense of the supernal or the exalted supernal or bitul bimtziyut, utter selflessness. Vezeu say the hakatov, and that's the order of the verse, as we looked at before. Yitzhak, we're not considering here the other words. Isaac, that's fear. Avraham, that's the first level of love. Avraham, and then a second level of love, a higher love. And then finally Yitzhak. And that means the lower fear, the minor love, the more exalted love, and then supernal awe. So here we have two completely different ways of understanding that verse, right? I mean, they may not be so different, but they're very different. They're about different kinds of emotion, different kinds of response. Now, okay, so let's just put that back into the process of prayer. With this amendment that the Rebbe says that the first word, Isaac, is before we get to shul or before we start praying. I mean, a person might be praying in a synagogue, might be praying at home, might have gone into the fields or into a park or a forest, and they're praying there. So the idea of this prayer, first of all, before the prayer, there is the sense of awe in relation to the divine, trying to behave in such a way that we are told to through the Torah, through the code of law. And then begins the process of prayer. And the process of prayer has different stages, and there's this feeling of love, like this sense that the flaming fire in the forest and the trees are singing in expression of the greatness of the divine. And that goes in step by step. It begins at the beginning of those verses in the prayer book. And that's the first level of love, the first level, the first name, Abraham. And then it goes to the higher level of Abraham. And then we come to a more supernal dimension of awe, which is what we express when we say the Amidah, in a way of being totally inert and our feet close together and praying in a very intimate and total way to the divine. Right. Okay. Let's just stop here for a second. So Julian is asking, could it be said to be about creativity and also the passing down of all early Judaism?
That was referring to the thing earlier on where the upper arousal to the lower arousal from Abraham to Isaac.
Right, okay, well, let's all right, look, that's a possibility, Jim. It's yeah, I mean, certainly creativity is part of it. There's a kind of transmission which leads to creativity. The passing down of early Judaism is, in a sense, a different story. I mean, that's where, through each generation, there's the passing down of Judaism to the next generation. And Judaism has everything in it. It has both the arousal from above and the response from below and the teaching. And the... So it's, I'm not sure about the passing down of early Judaism. Okay.
The idea was that because Abraham needed Isaac to continue, I'm reading things into it, but he had to arouse Isaac fully so that everything that was in Abraham, so his arousal, all the things that were in him, could be maximized by maximizing the amount that Isaac was open to them.
Right. Okay. I think that's reasonable.
Thank you.
Okay. Now. I can't hear.
Say a word.
Yes.
And Isaac and Jacob, Yaakov, represent qualities which are handed down to all generations to this day, which each one of those three is present on a certain level in every single Jewish person. That's why we call them our ancestors. Abraham represented taking godliness and putting it down into the world. He spread monotheism. He was hospitable to people who were very far from it all. And Isaac, as you say, in order to pass it down, it's not only that Isaac should continue the way of Abraham, but Isaac did something even more. He lifted up the ground to become more holy. That's the a paradigm of digging wells. It's not bringing the water there, it's revealing the water, elevating the thing that's there. And it's really this balance in the world, which is dealing with an imperfect world, which is what Avram is doing, and striving for a perfect world, which is Yitzchak is doing, and getting the correct balance.
Interesting.
Very profound.
Powerful, very powerful, Rabbi Lou.
Right. Thank you. Thank you, Rabbi Lou. All right. Now we're looking at the two. The Rebbe is looking at these two different types of explanations and comparing them with each other, or explaining something that we get from both of them together. Now, according to these two explanations, we see how Yitzhak is actually higher than Abraham. So there's a sense in which Yitzhak, which is awe, is higher than Abraham, which is love. I mean, if we begin that with that way of looking at it, the final term is Isaac. The final goal is the supernal awe. And the two kinds of love, which are lower, come before that. So Isaac is higher. That's in terms of looking at it in terms of love and awe. And when we talk about it in terms of the arousal, the ultimate goal is the arousal from below in a very fulfilled way, leading to birth. The arousal from above is all very well, but the real purpose is the arousal from below. And that arousal from below, after all the complexities of what's gone before, should be able to give birth. So that means that there's a sense in which Isaac is higher than Abraham. Are we able to understand that logic? Yeah. Now, there's a mysterious passage in the Talmud that the Rebbe now alludes to. That's why in the future, Yomru li Yitzhak, the Jewish people will say to Isaac, Davka, specifically to Isaac, ki ata avinu, you are our father. So we might have thought that we would relate in a higher way to Abraham. In fact, the deeper kind of relationship that we will have will be with Isaac. Now, so the Rebbe is going to spell out why Isaac is higher. Lebeya Harishon, according to the first explanation, two different kinds of exciting from above and response from below. Kevan Shahala Digvohot Milamata Lamail, since the ascent of the severity from below to above, Hilalo Hagbala does not have limits, because the ascending above can go higher and higher and higher. There's no limit. Whereas drawing down the line of kindness and love from above to below, Hiba Hagbala is something limited. It can't be too strong. Otherwise, what is below will be knocked down. And when we are considering the interplay of love and of awe, then ultimately it's Isaac who carries it through, because awe, fear, is higher than love. Okay, now I'd like to stop sharing the screen for a moment. and just try to see if we actually understand what this is saying or if we have any response to it. The idea that we start off with a lower fear and then we move to love and then to a higher love, but we then go higher to a supernal awe. So that means however beautiful the love is that we feel, it is capped by the possibility that we have, the potential we have for a sense of awe in relation to the divine.
Can I just...
Yes, of course, Rivka.
Yeah. The fact that we say about Isaac, you are our father, it's also not also because of the spiritual reasoning which you gave, but also because we want to exclude Ishmael. You see, because the other side also say to Abraham, our father, you know, the others say Islam. So really want to say it's Isaac because it's exclusively our father. Make sense? So, what do you say about it?
Let me just try to understand again. Why is Isaac exclusively our father?
Because he gave birth to the Jewish people. And Abraham, because Abraham gave the birth to both. So the other.
Yeah, but Isaac also gave birth to Esau.
So if they want to apply to him, they could do it, but they haven't done it. I don't know.
A story in the Talmud that God said to Abraham and to Yitzchak and to Yaakov, "My people have sinned," and Abraham and Yaakov said, "If they sinned, you got to punish them." And Yitzchak said, "What do you mean, my children? They're your children. So that's why we're going to say to Yitzchak is the one that's a real father because." It's not Yitzchak in contrast with Ishmael. It's Yitzchak in contrast with Avram and Yaakov, who unconditionally accepts his descendants. And when God says, your children have sinned, he said, when God's asking him to have compassion, he said, it's your children. You have compassion.
Very beautiful. Thank you.
And that's why it's the Gemara. It's a story in the Talmud, one of the Yaakov, that's why in the time to come, we're going to tell Yitzchak, yeah, you're our father because you stuck up for us even when we weren't living up to the standard that we should have.
Yeah, very good.
Thank you. Okay, very beautiful.
Well,
right. All right, I just want to recap because I believe that this is something very firm and solid that we can take away from this discourse. We've got the idea of the arousal from above and the arousal from below. That first of all, there's an arousal from above, typified by Abraham. There's the arousal from above, which gives birth, so to speak, to Isaac, the response from below. But then as a result of that response, we get to a higher level of arousal from above, a further level. And that makes our own response into something which has the power of generation. There's a beautiful concept in Chabad thought. I mean, it's very much about inspiration. Yes, it's about the inspiration of Judaism. But there's a beautiful concept that you have not succeeded in inspiring another person fully until you have transformed them to such an extent that they are then able to inspire others. You have to make the other person not just into a recipient of your wisdom. That person has to become a communicator of the most beautiful levels of the meaning of what Judaism is about. And that's really the attempts. I mean, there's just been the last few days, the Shluchim Conference in America, thousands of emissaries of the Rebbe gathering. They have one conference for men and another one a few months later for women. And they're all engaged in the work of inspiring other Jews about Judaism. But the work is not half completed with any individual until that individual becomes themselves an inspiring figure in their own right. Everyone has to be empowered and to be able to bring something of their own to this rich task that we have before us. And so here we have these, so that's the first explanation. And that can be seen as, a public dimension of our lives. The discourse doesn't talk about this feature, but this can be understood as the public dimension of our lives, relating to other people, inspiring them more. And it can also be seen in terms of the private dimension, that God inspires us, and as a result, we go further and then inspire others. And then there's a very deeply private dimension, which is the way in which we respond to prayer, the love. I mean, prayer in particular, because prayer is the time when love can be expressed to the divine. You can think about love of the divine when you're walking down the street, whether it's pouring with rain or it's bright sunlight, at that moment the person's heart can be filled with love of God. But prayer is the particular format where love of God can be expressed, should be expressed. And so then we have these four levels that we've been discussing. So this, you know, these two ways of understanding this verse, this is really something I believe very meaningful. It could be a fridge magnet. It could be a poster on the wall. It could be something that one thinks about in daily life, you know, having a particular moment that one is going to think about this dimension. Okay, now then the discourse, to be honest, becomes very complicated. Because there were, at that time, in the 1960s, they were managing to rescue a number of books of Hasidic teachings. And from generations earlier. And so there were certain books that were being rescued and then checked through, particularly by the Rebbe, and then published. And so the Rebbe quotes one of these, where there's a discourse by the Tzemach Tzedek, by the third Lubavitcher Rebbe, around 1850. And he's giving a discourse on this verse that our Sedra begins, Ve'ele told it Yitzchak, these are the generations of Isaac. And he says there that the main height of Isaac over Abraham is in the future. It's not so much now. It's in the future with the coming of Mashiach, the revival of the dead. That's when this power of Isaac is particularly seen.
Oh,
now that means that while even now there is the power of severity over love. Now, the point is Isaac is severity and love is Abraham. In order that the quality of severity should show itself in the best way, first of all, it has to receive from love. That's now. The severity has to receive from love in order to be expressed properly. Whereas in the future, it won't have to do that. And in this way, we can explain, says the Rebbe, the contradiction, apparent contradiction that we find in Hasidic teachings, that sometimes we find that the power of chesed, of kindness, is higher than gvur, higher than severity. And in other places, it puts it the other way around, particularly when we translate these qualities into two precious metals. One is gold and the other is silver. Now, gold can be considered gvura, severity, and silver is kindness. Now, obviously, gold is more expensive than silver. And so that means even in the image that we're saying, that gold represents severity and the silver represents kindness. So if gold is more expensive than silver, we can see that the severity is something very precious. And so there's a certain ambiguity. Which one is more important, the love or the awe? And they're both important. We need both. The structure of a person in spiritual terms is not complete unless he or she has both these dimensions functioning at the right time, at the same time. Now, then there is a rather complicated discussion that I propose to miss out, which is about Korach. But I'm missing that out and going now to the last page, the last section. Now, here is something that's very relevant to us, and with this the discourse concludes. Concerning the exaltitude, the special quality of severity over kindness, the very fact that gold is more expensive than silver, through this the Tzemach Tzedek explains, the third Lubavitcher Rebbe, and this is in a teaching that came like relatively recently, says the Rebbe, and it's now being analyzed and discussed. So concerning the quality of severity compared with kindness, the Tzemach Tzedek explains that it's like the quality of Mesirut Nefesh, self-sacrifice, compared with basic study of Torah and keeping of mitzvot. And we could imagine self-sacrifice to be a reaching beyond, doing something that absolutely goes beyond. That's self-sacrifice. And self-sacrifice, it might be dangerous. It might be dangerous to the extent that the person's life might be seriously at risk because of what they're trying to do. Like in Vichy, France, where the Rebbe was and the Rebbetzin, and it came to Sukkot. And in Paris, where the Rebbe lived, he was able to get an esrog and a lulav. That's wonderful. But there was a problem. He wanted the Lubavitch custom esrog, which is an esrog that grows in a particular orchard in Italy, and Rabbi Isaac Luria would get an esrog from that place, and there are all kinds of special kinds of significance about it. The Rebbe went by train to southern France, I think to Marseille, in order to get such an esrog, the kind that he wanted, the more significant kind. In order to get such an esrog, now going by train, a Jew with a beard, going in a train in Vichy, France. He'd been living with his wife, like carefully, you know, in the sort of sheltered world of Paris. But to leave Paris and trains were always a tremendously dangerous thing. Someone can stop you in the train, ask you for this, for that. And he was risking his life. And he was risking his life not in order to have a lulav and etrog. That would be a wonderful, very understandable thing, but he already had a lulav and etrog. He's risking his life to have the Chabad custom of an Esrog. That's Mesirut Nefesh. That's real self-sacrifice beyond the call of duty. So one can look at this in general. In fact, I must share with you, my PhD was about the concept of Mesirut Nefesh, the concept of self-sacrifice, particularly in the teachings of the second Lubavitcher Rebbe. So this quality of self-sacrifice, that's an amazing quality. And it goes beyond everything else. It goes beyond ordinary, conventional, holy study of Torah and doing a mitzvah. Now, Mesirut Nefesh is described here as ha'ala'ah, as ascending upwards. And studying Torah and keeping mitzvot is described as something which goes down below into the world. And this is now translated into something about the divine name, the tetragrammaton. Sh'al yedei Torah mitzvot, through Torah mitzvot, na'ase yichud vavki. There is a lower kind of unity achieved, the unity of the lower letters of the divine name. So those lower letters of the divine name, they are unified, the Vav and the He. By the day Mesirut Nefesh, but through going beyond oneself, Nase Yichud Yudke, there's a unity of a different level where the Yud and the He of the divine name, this tremendously powerful level, that's unified together. And when that Yud and Hey, the higher level, is unified, Shein Yano, it's Galut Atik. That's when the inner dimension of the Sphira Keter, crown, is revealed. And it's something beyond reason. Shelechein Ein Tam Al Mesirut Nefesh. I mean, there's no reason if someone is ready to give up their life for this and for that. Is it worth asking them why? There's even a story in the Talmud about Rabbi Akiva, who was risking his life in order to teach Torah, because in that time the Romans forbade the teaching of Torah, and he was teaching Torah. And the famous story where the fox said to him, "Why are you doing this?" Sorry, not the fox. And another rabbi said to him, "Why are you risking your life and everyone's life teaching Torah in this way? That the Romans have decreed that anyone who teaches Torah will be put to death. So why are you risking your life?" Well, Rabbi Akiva actually gave a very rational answer. And he gave a parable, a famous parable, I'm sure several of you know it, if not everyone, that the fish in the river were very disturbed because of the fishermen who were coming with their nets trying to catch the fish. So a fox said to the fish, "Little fish, you got such problems in the river because of the fishermen. Why don't you jump out onto the dry land and then you'll be safe from the fishermen?" So the fish answered the fox, "That's ridiculous. We depend on the water in order to live. So we may have a problem when they come into the river with nets. But if we came out of the river, we wouldn't be able to survive at all." And in the same way, said Rabbi Akiva, whatever their decrees are, if we stop learning Torah, then we will have that, then that will be the beginning of the end, God forbid. And so there we have in this case, he gives actually quite a good rationale why one should have self-sacrifice to study Torah in that particular situation. However, very often you can't give such a simple rationale. It's something which goes beyond reason, and it's beyond the downchaining of worlds. And the Rebbe explains it's the essence of the soul, which is higher than intellect and other inner qualities. And that's why, talking about self-sacrifice, actual self-sacrifice for a moment, we hear about the great rabbi, Rabbi Joseph Caro, that he yearned to die for the sanctification of God's name. He lived at a time when that happened to many people, and he yearned for that as well. But he was told from above that that's not your job. You have to do other things. You have to write the code of law and so on. And even though one could say, one can understand the rationale why he is made to continue living in the world, because he's got very important things to do, very important books to write. Nonetheless, he felt it was a kind of punishment for him that he wasn't allowed, so to speak, to die with self-sacrifice for the sanctification of God's name. So the whole point about the sanctification of God's name, self-sacrifice, it's incredibly exalted. Now, so that sense of self-sacrifice, which reaches beyond, that's like the quality of gvura, the quality of severity, which is very high and higher than kindness. Kindness flows down, whereas severity and is limited, whereas severity flows up and is unlimited. And then just looking at the last, at the end of this sort of fragment of a discourse, and this can be connected with what it says in the Pasha, in the Seder of the Week, where Isaac speaks to Esau and gives him a blessing. He speaks to Jacob, giving him the blessing that he thought he's going to give to Esau, but in fact he's giving it to Jacob. And what does it say? V'yitten l'chai Elokim, the divine name Elokim, which means the attribute of severity, should give you all kinds of blessings. So it's the name Elohim, which is severity, that is the greatest source of blessing. Kevin Shadavka Lidei Hagburot, because it's when there's severity, through the power of severity, Nimshak Tofeset Or, is that act Tosefet Or, is that extra light shines, as was explained earlier. And we haven't got the way this discourse actually finished off. But it's there we have this idea of a tremendous flow, which comes from the quality of severity. So the last part of this discourse is quite mysterious and it's very intense. But from the first part, I think that we're able to understand two different aspects of our relationship with the divine. And one is the question of inspiration and us being inspired and inspiring others and so on. And the second is various aspects about the service of prayer and the inspiration in prayer. So if there are any comments or questions.
I just wondered, I do apologize, I missed the very start, the very first few minutes. Although I followed the details, I just wondered if there was a subject title or type of subject. So I wondered why we were talking about the arousals, what led on to that.
Well, that's that's a big thing. You know, that's what we were exploring for the beginning. It's that way of interpreting this verse. Okay. Yes,
Gloria. I thought while you were speaking, going through the discourse, and you were talking about severity and self-sacrifice, and that these were the things that Yitzhak embodied more than his father Abraham, what came to me all the time was that Yitzhak himself embodied self-sacrifice, because he was nearly sacrificed and he didn't demur. He accepted it.
Interesting.
To me, that's quite an interesting.
Yep. That's interesting. Thank you.
Another point is when you said, and Rabbi Lou said as well, that the hay was the ore, Abraham was given a hay in his name, so it seems strange that he would have the letter of severity as an extra letter rather than the letter of love. So I guess Sarai to Sarah has the yod, but Abraham had the hay. So.
All right. That's an interesting point. I mean, there are lots of teachings about that. You know, once he has the hay, the numerical value of his name becomes 248, which means that the entire person is sanctified, and then he's able to father Isaac through that path. Okay. All right. I wish everyone a very good evening, and